Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict podcast, we're going to be reviewing one of our favorite shows, a Screen Verdict award-winning show, HBO's Veep.
Yes, and it's taken on, we've done a few showdowns with Veep, where it's taken on Girls, it's taken on Silicon Valley, it's taken on the world in our Screen Verdict Awards, and it's left its competitors, like, in the dust, really.
So, expectations are high for Season 5 of Veep.
Or are they?
Well, that's a good point. See, we've scored each season consistently well. We've liked them all. But something a little bit different about this season. Matt, can you explain what's going on?
Well, the series creator, Armando Iannucci, who good mate of mine.
We're on mate terms.
I was partying with him at the Emmys after party. He let me hold his Emmy that he'd just won.
And I said, cheers, mate. And that's when I knew.
Yeah. Big congratulations all round. Hey, Armando, congratulations on just winning Best Comedy Series. Oh, Matt, congratulations on predicting we'd win Best Comedy Series.
Congrats all right. It was a collective celebration.
Anyway. Mate of mine, Armando Iannucci, unfortunately, decided to leave the show at the end of the season. So the real voice, the creator, the guy who created the show in the thick of it and wrote the movie In the Loop, which we were also massive fans of.
Loved it.
Now not involved in the show.
So
I think like you consult it. Like I think they could call him every now and then if they had a question. But I don't think like that was something that was going to get tapped into too much.
So Armando, look, I'm struggling to think of a horribly offensive euphemism. Can you throw me something? Hit me with the zinger.
That's when he says something really rude and they go, "Oh, is he annoyed that we called him?" Like, or that help for the show. the reason Armando left was to spend more time with his family, because he's from England, he lives in England, so it wasn't like one of those, like, bitter leave, like, you know, it wasn't like HBO, "Oh, look, it's not working, mate, get out of here," or him going, "Oh, I'm sick of these conditions, screw everyone, I hate everyone." It was, he did leave for family reasons, and I did chat with him a bit about that, and sort of not off the record was never said. It wasn't an off the record chat, but it wasn't like for an interview or like definitely wasn't being recorded or anything. And it seemed pretty sincere from him and everyone on the crew that it was leaving in very good terms.
This is where you find out he's actually a Swedish passport holder, and he realized, "Oh man, I've only got like a short amount of time to get my stuff sorted out in England because we're getting kicked out soon."
He'd been tweeting about the Brexit vote. He was for staying. He was, believe it or not. I was talking with one of the producers, because a few of the guys were from England. Like, he brought some English people with him, and most of them did leave. A couple of them did leave with him as well, make us the same decision. I was talking to one of the writers, producers of the show about leaving, and he said that it was the hardest decision he ever had to make in his life, that he loved working on Veep so much, that it was the best working environment he'd ever had, that everyone got on so well, that it was just such a, like, what they were working on was such good material and stuff. And he said, "But it was my son or daughter, I can't remember who was, their last year in high school, and the last year they'd be living at home." And he said he just didn't want to give up that time he had, like, with his kid before they moved out. He said it was the toughest decision he ever had to make.
I guess he likes his kid more than Selena does.
Yes, very much so. Good news is we had one of the Brits stay on, probably more than one, but one notable Brit stay on with the series, who directed 4 of the episodes.
And that is?
Chris Addison.
Oh, yeah. Chris Addison. Ollie from the thick of it.
Yeah, so that's good. He's kicked her out.
I thought you were going to tell me that Hugh Laurie directed 4 episodes.
Oh, because yes, Hugh Laurie, another Brit who wasn't from the show day one, in on the show day one, but he stayed this season two, another Brit.
Very good. So
right, let's talk about the season.
We're going to kick off. Yeah, we'll kick it off. Season 5. We're going to be doing spoilers, so we'll hit you with a quick spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
We are now going to talk about spoilers. The gates are open. We can talk about whatever we want that happened this season now on the
United
show.
States House of Spoilers.
Yeah.
Now, Season 4 ended in a tie. What is the... Ridiculous. How do the... What do they call them again? The electoral points, votes...
College.
How is that an even numbered total? Ridiculousness.
Right for comedy, this. It's something that hasn't really been mined by anyone before.
So we have a tied election, and I guess there's a little bit of... a glimmer of hope for the Selena Meyer team, where it looks like some votes in Nevada, went missing. And so that's their first mission, to track those down.
With the tie, right? Okay. Like, usually ties are boring. That's why, like, America doesn't like soccer. Because no one likes a tied game and all these sorts of things. Don't you think for a presidential election, actually, a tie is a lot more interesting than if you've got a clear winner?
I think this is part of the reason why Americans like soccer during the World Cup. Also because it's the biggest tournament, but because you then have, in the World Cup, rather than just, a Premier League game where there's a tie, in the World Cup, you have a tie, then extra time. Then if extra time doesn't work, you have penalties. So we go through every method of extra time and penalties this season in determining the election, which I think you're right, made it a lot more exciting than just a clear victory.
Mm. So, they're in Nevada, and... and yes, they've got to find some... There's some missing votes. Got to sniff them out. So they send down the A-team to find these missing votes.
Yeah, you've got Amy and... I think are we introduced to Richard? Is it season 3 or season 4? I can't remember, but he's a lot more prominent this season.
Season 3, I think.
And I love Richard. He's kind of got that, I don't know, a little bit of a, maybe less over the top, but he's kind of got that, Keenan Thompson from SNL. He's kind of just got this big smile where it's just like, there's always just something like a bit goofy or cheeky about him, and he can say just the most normal things, but the fact that he's like just relentlessly positive, and has this big smile on his face, just I can't help but laugh. I think he's one of the most likable characters on the show.
He is such a great character on this show, and has been such a great addition to the show for one reason. No, not for one. For a couple of reasons, but like I think primarily because he offers something that no one else in the cast does. Like, he brings something fresh to the show. That in this show of very cynical, hateful people, he is an eternal optimist who isn't self-interested particularly. He's happy to help the team, and he's so enthusiastic. And that plays so well off everyone else's personality. Like, it's just such a good... So it's different, but it also, bounces well off the other personalities you have. And I think that's, like, so... Like, that's why a show like Parks and Rec was so good. You had all these different personalities that just bounced off each other so well. And I think that's the other thing with that he brings to me. He bounces off all these different personalities so well. And he's just so funny, nearly everything he says. Which is why, like, he's a better addition to the show than Hugh Laurie, if for mind.
Yeah, I thought Hugh was kind of funny last season, his character of Tom, I guess, because of how, like, charismatic he was and kind of his success kind of, it was sort of comedic, because that kind of highlighted, like, Selena's shortcomings. This season, his character is a bit more different because he's kind of doing sneaky, underhanded things and he becomes more of, like, an oppositional character. So it changed a bit this season. But you're right. I think that that juxtaposition between all these people who are just so crude and cynical and selfish and then Richard, who is just relentlessly positive, just takes everything on the chin and is actually quite useful in terms of his legal knowledge, etc., definitely makes him one of my favourite characters of the season.
So they're all down there. They're all trying to figure it out. We have Jonah working for Richard for a bit, which is a bit funny. Then Jonah gets in someone that works under him because he can't be the very bottom of the totem pole, and they make for a good team of three.
And it...
Is that why we're appearing? Because there isn't a clear hierarchy between us. Like, if this was my podcast and you were sort of my, like, sidekick, would you feel the need to get a third guy in as a sort of, like, third fiddle to the podcast crew?
Yeah, I'd always just be requesting guests and so I'm just being really mean to them. Just establishing myself in, like, look, it might not be my podcast, but I'm, like, in the middle. Like, I'm kind of high up, you know? Got to respect that.
Yeah.
So, I can't remember exactly what happens, but basically, they think that they've got these... they've accidentally got someone to reveal where the hidden boats are, and then they go to court, and they get that woman, that insufferable woman... who gives both sides to every story. And for some reason, Selena thinks she's giving good advice when she's just literally going around in circles to try and delay the vote until they get what they need. And then as soon as they get it, they need her to flip the vote because they're when they finally get the votes that they want, they were actually in favor of whoever they were running against.
Garrity.
Yeah, Buddy Garrity from Friday Night Lights.
Buddy Garrity from Friday Night Lights.
It's a, well, man. So, it's a truly American tale. You can go from being a car salesman to President of the United States in a different show.
That's a different character. anyway. And it also means that we're counting these votes. She actually loses the popular vote, which she had won. So she lost one of her key arguments for why she should be president, because more Americans voted for her.
This brings us to an interesting episode. I imagine this... I'm interested to see what you thought about it. I imagine it's a bit of a polarizing episode. Selena, her mum, is dying. And obviously that's quite sad, but Selena never really cared that much for her mother, didn't think she was a very kind and loving mother, and her illness actually gives her a bit of a bump in the poll numbers. So we kind of see a bit of a, well, somewhat very selfish side of Selena come out, but then as it is revealed that the vote count in Nevada... I'm straining so hard not to say Nevada. Doesn't go away. She is incredibly depressed and emotional as she goes to give her, what's it called, eulogy at the funeral, and ends up being sort of a rather fortuitous display of emotion for her. Did you think that this was sort of a funny juxtaposition, sort of a black humor episode, or did you think this made Selena a bit too unlikable?
Well, I had someone tell me I was doing a Game of Thrones web chat with some people at Gold Derby, and one of them afterwards said to me, "Have you seen Beep yet?" They knew I'm a big Beep. I said no, but they're like, "Oh, can't wait to hear your thoughts." They're like, "I don't know, Selena does the worst thing she's ever done in this episode. So I was going, oh, this is interesting. So I had these expectations heading into the episode. I feel like it was pretty much in Selena's character. Like, there was nothing that she did where I was like, oh, I don't think Selena would do that. And before we talk about, like, the story, like, how great a performance was this episode for Julia Louis-Dreyfus? Wasn't this Julia Louis-Dreyfus at her finest?
Yeah, I definitely thought this was, I was thinking this was a potential Emmy tape episode for her. I
got her celebrating when she finds out they're counting the votes or something, right, and Catherine walks in. Goes, is Mum better? And it turns out she's just been put down. Like, and Selena had to explain why they were so happy. And then you've got her at the eulogy crying and stuff. Like, a lot of emotions here. I actually found it quite great dark comedy.
Yeah, I thought... I don't know if this was my favourite episode, but I did think it provided some pretty good moments. And what is the name of... I should know. Who's the guy that crunches all the numbers?
Kent.
Kent James? Yes. I thought this was a great episode for Kent because they kind of view him as this numbers robot and everything to him is just data. And so him explaining that her being ill means, you know, that this boost in the poll numbers would subside. However, she could, if she were to pull the plug, she'd experience a shorter lived but higher inclined death bump in the pulse as a result of this. Was just, I thought it was just like a sort of great, it was like fertile ground for for Kent to be relentlessly pragmatic.
Yeah, no, those are good. Yeah, again, not my favorite episode. I think we're going to get to sort of the best episode or two a bit later in the season. But, you know, really, really strong one, I think. And great. I want, like, Veep's not a show where I want the characters to be likable. Like, that, it's a this is a cynical look at politics, and you need to see them sort of at the most cynical. Like, I think I'd be upset in some of the stuff that, like, Frank Underwood does, like, murder people and stuff. I feel like we'd be pushing it too far. But this sort of thing was very, I think, believable in the world that they're trying to lampoon.
You can alter this answer depending... Well, you could say you might have been at one point, during one point of the season, it might have changed. But let's say, you know, from the start of the season, were you rooting for Selena Meyer to win the presidency, or did you want her to lose all the tiebreakers?
I wanted the team to win, because I like seeing what they get up to. But I want, like, can I jump the gun on what ends up happening?
Sure.
Yeah, but I wasn't, like, upset that they lost.
See, I think I'm in a similar spot. I wanted them to win, but part of me thought, well, they're pretty ineffectual. And some of the stuff that they have done means they arguably don't deserve to win. Now, I'm sure people on the other side are doing stuff just as sketchy. But that was sort of my position. I wanted them to win, but if they didn't, it's not like... I was like, no, they're robbed. They didn't deserve that. Because obviously, yeah, they're all a bunch of headless chickens playing this game of politics.
Yeah. So, we then have a couple of episodes where we introduce, there's a seat opens in Nevada on the mind. We sort of shift from Nevada after that to New Hampshire, becomes the new sort of battleground state in the playoffs of the presidential race, because a congressional seat opens up. That perhaps the Democrats could... Oh, no, sorry. There is no party affiliation on this show. Selena is not Democrat nor Republican. They never say what party she's from. So, sorry, where Selena's party could take a seat, in New Hampshire, which could give them the votes they need to win the congressional vote for who becomes the president. Because now it's going to Congress. She wasn't able to win Nevada. It's now going to Congress. And Nevada, New Hampshire is the seat which they could win. And there's someone they know that can pull a few strings in New Hampshire who pick who the new congressman's going to be. And they have someone in mind that's going to be the perfect candidate for New Hampshire.
This is one of, if not my favorite storylines of the season. They need someone that they're going to be able to control. They've got a powerful person in New Hampshire. Who can that guy pick to put in their place, who will do what they say and will win the race for them? None other than the one, the only, Jonah. This was so fun. Just the level of grandeur that Jonah brought to this visit, that, like, he was, like, Congress. Like, I'm going to show that you can believe in yourself so hard that you can become a congressman of the United States. And his uncle is just ruthless, saying, you are just like an empty sack of crap. I could get a dog turd elected in this town. You will do what I say, and you will take it. But Jonah doesn't blink. Like, he is still just so enthused, like, because he's just sort of, like, delusional confidence, like, with women or in politics. You know, he's getting kicked out of the White House because of this, like, him leaking stuff onto his blog, and he still thinks that he's going to, like, come back and be president one day and, like, have the final laugh on all of these people. So to see Jonah actually get to chase that dream in, like, a congressional race was just so satisfying.
Now, also, his uncle, played by Peter McNichol, Emmy Award-winning Peter McNichol from Ally McBeal. I loved this casting, and I love this character.
He definitely competed with, was it Roger Furlong, for most offensive character on the show. And that's a pretty high bar.
It was so good. Like, he was so good. Like, he would get my vote for best guest actor in a comedy series this year. And it was just so good, him losing it at Jonah in particular. Because Peter McNichol is so short, and, like, Jonah is so tall. But see, the amount of anger and the amount of authority he still had over Jonah was real. Like, just, it looked comic, it sounded like it was just, like, some of the best scenes of the season were him losing it. And I loved how he loved, like, just, I could go on about his character a bit, like, how he, like, loved Richard, like, in the debate, and thought he could be, like, oh, I could work with you. And then Richard just says something so stupid, and he goes, oh, I have such great things in mind. I loved him. He was so good.
Yeah, there were some pretty great moments on this campaign. Like, when Jonah does this great speech at, Patton Oswalt, the fondler, about him being, like, this defective bully, but then the tape looks like he's insulting someone with Down syndrome. Yeah. And Richard, for the second time that episode, had pressed off when he meant on and on when he meant off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. So Jonah's campaign is a sight to behold. It's one of my favourite storylines of the season. It was just a great environment to see Jonah in. He does stuff like goes off at Selena, which should have been the worst thing he could have done. And it's stuff like people love it. He,
John H. Yeah. Ryan.
Yeah, John H. Ryan. Like, there's so many moments. You probably can't go through them all. But I was interviewing Timothy Simons about this year. The week before, like, the week after he'd won the election. And he's the actor who plays Jonah, and I said to him, boy, like, just with Jonah in that spot, you know he's going to screw up the vote somehow. Like I said, you know that, like, this is not going to be good. Like, he's going to find a way to stuff this up.
So his storyline, well, we might have to jump back a bit, but that kind of culminates with him being late to the final vote, in which he is,
he's got to, what does he have to do? He's late to the final vote, and they realize that Tom James is playing some dirty tricks, so they actually decide they want him to vote for the other person. They don't actually want him to vote for Selena Myers. And Selena, and he ends up screwing it up by voting for her.
Because if she loses to Buddy Garrity, then she can run against him in 4 years. But if it's a tie and then it goes to the Senate and they vote between the vice presidents and Tom wins, you can't really run against your own party. And apparently his first term wouldn't count because he'd be an elevated vice president. So she'd have to wait 3 whole terms in order to try and run again.
Yeah.
Assuming he does well.
This is like an interesting thing for comedy that I like. They sort of, like, there's a few things that like are sort of rich for comedy that I don't think is being mined into too much. And there's another thought that like, not that I've had in a comedic thought before, but like sort of sometimes you sort of probably want your party to lose an election, right? Because then you can run for president in 4 years. Like, I'm sure there's some people, some Democrats, that want Hillary Clinton to lose this election, right? Because they go, oh man, then I'll just so easily beat Trump in 4 years and get to be president. And you know there's Republicans that are wanting Trump to lose so they can beat Hillary Clinton in 4 years. That's a bit like, that's a bit different because, like, I think people just want Trump to lose in the Republican Party because they're worried about what he's going to do. But, like, 4 years ago, I'm sure that people wanting Romney to lose, like your Chris Christie's or your whatever, go, oh man, I hope Romney loses that I can run in 4 years.
And there's a bit of a difference between just hoping it and then getting, actively trying to flip the vote.
Yeah. How confusing a vote would have that been for Jonah? Like, to have to explain, like, to people in his party. Like, yeah. I thought, let's vote for the presidential candidate from the other party. Why not?
That kind of takes us towards the end of the season. Along the way, we also had, I guess, sort of a funny storyline was Selena starts dating this billionaire guy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that.
And she goes to tweet him, but instead of sending a direct message, she just posts a public tweet. And so they don't want their relationship to get out, I think because they're considering they're only able to bail out one of these two major banks, and it's a conflict of interest because he's got billions of dollars with this one bank. So what they do is they say that the Chinese hacked her Twitter account, which could be, if the Chinese did hack her Twitter account, why would they send that message to to this billionaire who she does end up publicly dating? So yeah, I guess in a show of strength, she puts sanctions on the Chinese and forces them to negotiate by coming to Camp David. And this was kind of a funny episode where she's trying to appease Catherine, make it look like she's supportive of a new lesbian relationship, while at the same time trying to have these secret meetings with the Chinese. And in an accidental sort of show of frustration, not really strength with the Chinese, she actually sort of scares them and gets them to put Tibet on the table, which is going to be sort of her crowning thing. She realizes at the end, even if she doesn't win the presidency, she wants that Nobel Prize. She needs to get credit for Tibet. But I guess, as was the theme of this season, nothing really went to plan. And China doesn't make any agreements until the day that, what's her name, Laura Montez gets nominated as president, and then she gets credit for freeing Tibet.
Yeah. Yeah, it really comes unraveling. And they had that whole stuff with her and the CEO that was played by John Slattery, and he was really good in the season. I really like the storyline where someone called her the C word, and she wants the investigation who did it, and it just turns out that everyone on the staff has called her that at some point.
that was. When she calls in
a great self-contained funny story with a somewhat predictable but really satisfying punchline.
Yeah.
And then there was the bit I wasn't expecting where Gary had called her that, but what he thought the C word was a much tamer word. And then his reaction when he hears the C word everyone else has been calling her was pretty good. So there'd been some fun little moments along the way too.
There was some good moments for Gary. Obviously, we're a big fan of Tony Hale. In that episode, he had the episode where he was accidentally named to the hottest 40, but on the hill or whatever that list was. So, you know, he's always been sort of a reserved, sort of low self-esteem character. But then all of a sudden he gets a boost. He thinks he's one of the sexiest 40 people on the hill. So that was kind of funny to see Gary with that confidence. And then in the final episode where he just loses it at the rest of the team, and rather than them taking him seriously, they just think it's entertainment. Everyone just starts recording him on their phones.
Yeah. Yeah, and I imagine that will be Tony Hale's Emmy tape.
Yeah, I would agree.
I really don't... just talking Emmy... for a second, or MVPs of the season, I really think Timothy Simons, who plays Jonah, if he could get nominated this year, might have a crack at it.
Yeah, I'd love that. He's got some great episodes, including maybe that first one where he goes off on Selena, and the crowd loves it.
Yeah, that was a great episode. Really, really good. He said in the... So, we're probably now talking about the last two episodes, which are probably the big episodes of the season, and I think that second last one may be one of Beep's best episodes of all time, maybe. Definitely one of the best episodes of the season, where we see Catherine's documentary. And Timothy Simons told me that if it made the final cut, and he hadn't seen the final episode, so not sure he made it, that he says... the most Jonah thing that's ever been said on the show. So I was watching this episode I wonder what line this is that's the most Jonah thing that's ever been said.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I wasn't consciously looking for that because you only just told me Timothy Simon said that now. I would guess maybe when he's in his campaign office, and does he compare himself to JFK? Something like that?
Oh.
I mean, that's a pretty grandiose sense of delusion there from Jonah, so that was kind of funny. Maybe that...
I have to rewatch the episode.
Next time you interview him, say you'll...
Yeah, I might tweet him and just ask him, is this the most Jonah thing you ever said? This is the line I thought it might be. He's on the phone, and he says, "I'm eating so much pussy, I'm shitting clits, son." And then it pans out, and Peter McNichol runs in and grabs him by the arm and says, "We're in an elementary school." Which is such a good moment. Like, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the funniest moments. Like, that, like, hit just as hard, like, you repeating it as the first time I saw it on the show, so.
Maybe even better. I've got very good delivery.
Yeah, if they need, like, an Australian, you know, foreign correspondent at the embassy or something next season, Matt's available for the role.
Yes, definitely. I'm on board. I'll take time off work. I'll quit my job to be on the show.
I'd say you're as qualified as Jonah. So
yeah,
there's precedent for you being hired.
And to be honest, I could be an American too, because like they got Hugh Laurie in to play an American.
Yeah. If they need someone to sound like the governor and or Frank Underwood and or Foghorn Leghorn, you're the guy.
Well, here's the thing, Selena. We've got a big vote on the hill. It's a shame you're not president anymore. We could have talked about politics like a cat in the belly of a whale.
You know those Florida whales, always eating cats.
Always eating cats.
Very good.
Cool. So what did you think of that documentary? The whole episode was a documentary Catherine had made.
Yeah, so I thought this was pretty brilliant, really, because Catherine, she'd been annoying Selena throughout the season with this documentary, and I thought, why is she doing this? Just get out, Catherine. But then it all made sense in episode 9. And it was very clever because it was a unique episode, but that documentary style also fit into the, you know, the usual episode style. So it didn't seem too out of place. So I thought that worked very well. And you got a lot of great sort of like behind-the-scenes moments and also flashbacks to things earlier in the season where you saw the first half and then you saw like an additional then what happened. Which was, you know, like a great reveal, like a little sort of bonus for you know, remembering little bits earlier in the season, which I really enjoyed. And also it was just a good way to cover how, you know, the final vote eventually goes down. So definitely a standout episode for the show.
I was saying to Matt Walsh, when I interviewed him, that it reminded me of something. And he said, oh, the testimony episode we did last year.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, I see where you're coming from, but no. it reminded me, can you guess what it reminded me of, Jonathan? Do you know me better than Matt Walsh?
Something to do with the West Wing.
No. I see where you're coming from, but no. It reminded me of the fourth season of Arrested Development.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to look at it. I mean, there was a lot of sort of reveals in that where something would happen in an episode and it would appear as one thing, and then you wouldn't find out until two or three episodes later that, you know, that person was actually, you know, the person in front of them in the airplane seat was this character or whatever. And it gave you sort of a different perspective on things and actually made previous episodes funnier, or, you know, there was payoffs multiple episodes later. So, yeah, I certainly see the parallels there.
Yeah. And for those, because we loved the rest of Arrested season 4, and I love this episode. This is very good and a more satisfying ending than Arrested Development season 4.
Yeah, great. There was a bit of a roller coaster ride that season. Like, starts slow, then gets, you know, hits some real high points once, you know, all the threads come together, and then unfortunately just that final episode let it down. But this episode was great. Definite high point for me.
Then we have the final episode. The final episode, which is the inauguration, and it's sort of set up that, well, it's sort of like a bit of a wine, like all the drama happened in episode 47, and the sort of setup for the final episode is, or the episode 9, sorry, and then the sort of like thing is like, oh, well, Selena lost, Tom James is going to become president, she's going to be stuck being vice president again, and you sort of go into the episode thinking that's the direction it's going to go. But in true Veep fashion, there is a twist, there is a wrinkle that completely changes the game at the end of the season.
So, Vice President Doyle, who Selena had promised Secretary of State to, but then gone ahead and promised Secretary of State to, I think, a representative from Michigan or somewhere else in order to win their vote, I guess uncovers this, and in order to get to basically get them back, he lobbies votes for Montez over Tom, and then in another tie, the vote goes to him of all people. Doyle then gets to decide, and he votes for Montez, which was, I mean, isn't he on the...
Yeah.
Did he just flip parties?
Yeah. Because wasn't she going to name him Secretary of State?
Yeah, if she was the... If he's the VP, he has to be on Selena's party. So yeah. What a controversial decision that is.
That, the papers would have been writing it. Like, there's so... Yeah, the papers would have been writing about this the next day.
Like, imagine if... Well, yeah. Like, imagine if there's, like, a tied vote between, let's say, Clinton and Trump, then that can't be broken, so it goes to the vice...
Joe Biden.
Yeah, so we don't know who they are. Let's just throw out names. Like, then it goes to, like, Elizabeth Warren versus Newt Gingrich or something. Then Joe Biden votes for Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. Well, let's go, since it's, like, an incumbent that's running, let's say, like, it goes back 4 years... And it's like Joe Biden votes for Paul Ryan. Oh, no, wait, he was the VP nominee then, though, so he wouldn't have voted for Paul Ryan over
himself.
Yeah,
that's what happened. Yeah. What? Wait.
What's that?
Wait, I thought you said it correctly and then said you said it incorrectly. But you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the thing I got wrong was like, oh, well, let's take it back to like 4 years ago when you have more reasonable people running for president and vice president and things. And then I was like, oh, no, that wouldn't have worked because Joe Biden was one of the nominees at that point.
Well, that's an interesting question. If everything that happened in this season of Veep happened in the 2012 election, does Biden get to vote between Biden and Paul Ryan?
I think so. I'm under the impression that Joe Biden would then get to choose because I know that there was talk if there was a tie that election that Joe Biden might get to cast the vote for himself as vice president and choose himself to be the vice president. So I imagine that would work for president too. So,
well, there you go. So Doyle does the unthinkable.
I think if I was writing a newspaper, the next day the heading would be "Foiled by Doyle."
All right. If there are any newspapers out there looking to hire, if Matt's not on Veep next season, he's also available as a journalist.
I can also do a good journalist accent. Like, extra, extra, get the paper, foiled by Doyle. Selena Myers. I can't think of a fun heading with her name.
And yes, to Matt, being a journalist is the same thing as a paperboy.
Yeah. Extra, extra. Selena's political party, foiled by Doyle.
I wrote this article. Please buy my newspaper.
Yes.
Alrighty.
This is crazy. So this means next season is going to be about the life of an ex-president.
Yes, it looks like she was going to be president. Then it looked like she was going to be vice president. Now, Selena Meyer, no idea what she's going to be.
A former president.
Yeah. And what will she do with her former presidency?
Who knows?
Yeah, I really have no idea what direction the show's going to take.
I am worried for the direction the show's going to take. Like, that could have been a series final.
Mm.
Like, that episode. It would have been a great series final, and it would have wrapped up a great series. And now I'm a bit worried it might be a bit directionless, and I'm not sure, like, what they'll do with this, and it might be, like, I'm again got a bit of trepidation heading into the next season, the same like I did this season. However, I do think this is quite, if they are able to execute well, it'll be quite a good series when all's said and done, that it's covered sort of what it's like being vice president, what it's like being president, what it's like sort of running for president and sort of being in that tight election situation, and now what it's like being a former president. Like, it's going to be a very sort of comprehensive series in, like, the ground it covers, and so far it's done all of those stages very well. Like, so part of me is quite excited to see, like, you know, what ground they covered here.
Are you more interested, are you more concerned for Selena's future or Jonah and his testicles?
Selena's future.
I feel like there's probably more storylines in what Selena does next. But I am concerned for Jonah. I thought that was a funny little kind of twist at the end, how he had been you know, fondled by Patton Oswalt, and then when he meets him at the bowling alley, you know, he tells him that he should check himself regularly, which is kind of like, you know, giving him advice, but also just kind of like a crude poke at the fact that, like, he had basically, like, infringed upon his personal space. But it turned out that he did actually end up getting testicular cancer, which is a bit of a cruel irony for Jonah there.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm glad you explained the premise of that question, so people who are big Scream Verdict fans but not Veep fans just often see our podcast go, boy, Jonathan just seems unusually obsessed with the testicles of one of the characters of this show. And what Selena losing the tied election means to some other guy's testicles.
Yeah, well, we do get very specific here in Scream Verdict. We really delve into all the nooks and crannies with our film and television reviews.
We do. So, is it time to give it a verdict?
A Scream Verdict. Okay. Veep, Season 5. I was, as we said at the start, a little worried about it, but I think my worries were dispelled within a couple of episodes. It was, you, I don't think you really would have noticed that there had been a staff change if nobody had told you. I mean, the pacing, the improv lines, the tone of it, the zingers, the one-liners were all great. I think in terms of the overall arc of the season with the election, one of, if not the strongest of any season so far. Definitely had the best kind of callbacks and ups and downs in the plots throughout the season. I thought maybe, you know, one or two episodes weren't as funny. You know, a couple of episodes ended and kind of made me feel a bit like almost down. Like, things almost went too bad for a lot of the time this season. But, you know, the characters deserve that. They're a bunch of selfish people. But really enjoyable overall. Definitely a great season from Veep. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah. I think maybe, like, one of the reasons, like, things end sad and I don't really mind that, but maybe one of the reasons why I wanted her to win the election was because I think this show is at its best when everyone's together. Like, when you got those big scenes where you got five or six of the cats and they're not all split up heaps, and I thought maybe her winning would bring them all together a bit more.
Mm.
But, so maybe that's it. But I thought this season was fantastic. Like, for someone who was a bit worried with the new showrunner coming in with Armando leaving, I think it really was quite a seamless transition. Feels a little different, but every season of Veep has felt a little different anyway. And I just thought, like, there was such funny little stuff, like Seagate and all those sorts of things. And then this plotting was so good. I think they really explored the tight election really well in a funny way, in a way that was interesting. I think the characters were really good and stayed true to their characters. I think it was really some new characters that were great, like Peter McNichol. I think it was a fantastic... Like, I just love this season. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. Maybe not their strongest season. I think it has lost something with Armando. But I think they've, like, you know... It's been really... If I was to describe this season in three words, I'd say continuity with change.
Very good. Well, there you go. Strong reviews from Veep. Definitely going to be a contender again at next year's ESPY Awards. If you've been watching Veep, let us know what you thought and head over to facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast and give us your thoughts on Veep.
Yes, very much so. Do we have anything for housekeeping, Jonathan?
Housekeeping... In Jonathan News, this week in Jonathan News...
Here we go, I'm interested, I don't think I know this.
On Thursday evening, I will be flying to Vanuatu, which...
Whoa!
Which to our Australian listeners is moderately exotic. To our American listeners, they're thinking, what's a Vanuatu? Bit of a trip.
Survivor fan listeners, that was season 8, I believe, of Survivor, was Survivor Vanuatu.
Well, maybe
continue, Jonathan.
Maybe I should check out a couple episodes of Survivor to prepare before I go.
Season ends strong. Strong ending to that season.
So we may have to do some... I guess all of our podcasts are international now, but it'll be a new time zone for Screen Verdicts. We might have to record a tropical podcast, and I'll try and get some videos and things for you there. See if we can get some entertainment from paradise for the podcast.
One quick correction and apology. It was the 9th season of Survivor Vanuatu.
The Survivor fans were screaming at their laptops. Their iPhones.
Palau was the 8th.
What sort of racist doesn't know the difference between Palau and Vanuatu? Or worse still, a faux Survivor fan.
Okay. Very good. Do we have time to do another podcast today, Jonathan? Or are you running short on time?
The Bachelorette starts in 31 minutes. So... perhaps a speed review. Whether it gets recorded today or another time, you guys don't know, thanks to movie magic.
I just wanted to do my housekeeping now or save it for the next podcast.
This one's pretty long. Let's save it for the next one.
Right. We're doing a speed review.
We got Kimmy Schmidt, Finding Dory...
I'm seeing it Saturday with a friend. We definitely won't be doing Finding Dory today.
And there's a show, what's it called? I don't know, some people like it. Matt thinks I should. Game of Thrones.
Have you watched that yet?
I have 2.5 episodes done.
Oh, no. I don't think it's safe to go.
Look, it's a very long flight to Vanuatu. I'm sure I'll catch up, so... that's going to be in the not-too-distant future as well. So, thanks a lot for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. See you soon. And we'll see you next week.